the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Sharanam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Pratipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by a compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassion and mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself or slander others. Not to be avaricious in the bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma. And I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma. And I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dudyampi tatyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are prepared to end suffering.
If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Jim?
This morning, I need to be a little bit early. I just wanted to let people know so that it's not a distraction.
Thank you. So just as a reminder, we do record Sunday morning groups and post it for our Moodles. What shall we look at today? Rebecca?
Well, I'd like to look at the koan that I started looking at.
The koan that you started to look at, yes.
So,
I'm going to stop you there. Just in case, for those folks who don't know what a koan is, if you haven't been sitting with us, would you like to say what that is?
Yeah, it's like a riddle that is designed to confound conditioned mind that can really only be resolved with insight or flash.
Okay. Yeah, and we're all looking at koans for this week of your practice.
Yeah. And so, because I just want to get a little clearer on mm-hmm. what it is I'm looking at.
Uh-huh.
At the question itself, you know.
Yes.
So the question was, what is union with life?
Uh-huh. The question is, what is union with life?
Yeah. And so I was just looking at how the question itself can pull me away into somebody who's asking, "What is union with life?"
So there's a process that you're noticing around questioning.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because what drops in for me in the word union with life is, why would there be a with? It's a redundant conundrum.
Yes, yeah.
Right? The union is implicit without the with, and that's where the language starts to get... The language points to the reason it can only be understood as a koan.
Yes.
Because the process of framing the question that way and then looking at the someone who wants to be with is pointing at the exact process that there's a struggle with.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, let me see if I can say that back in any sort of semblance of what you just said, because it came in, but it would be nice to be able to articulate it somewhat.
Or not.
Oh, maybe not.
Because I think the insight's dropping in with the insight to why it's troubling as a question.
Oh my God, I just saw my whole life in that in that very process. Okay, let me see if I can say that.
Yeah.
You know, is the whole karmic process of okay, well, let me see what a difference I can make in the world. Or, okay, let me see what project I can do. Okay, let me see if I can, you know, it's that, okay, let me see if. which is the formation of an identity on the heels of the experience of insight.
Yes, the formation of the identity that is trying to understand the insight that came in. There's a movement away from it, right? It's the exact opposite of with.
Yeah, it is. It's the exact opposite. It's the moving away.
Yeah. So with implies an object.
Yeah.
So how can union be with anything?
Yeah. It did at the moment. At the time last night, I was looking at it, it seemed like a contradiction of terms.
Right. So there is union, but union with implies separation that has to come back to union.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing to hold.
Yes, it is. And this has dropped in twice in the last little while, so I'll just say, and that is, it also brings up this kind of corollary kind of question of then, what is this human we're saving? Who is this? What does it mean that we often say we're here to save the human?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would hold it in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we keep coming back to is the process of using the same process to understand the question instead of staying with the experience of the answer. Right? Because the understanding happens here, which requires us to have something here and something here and then resolve it and make meaning out of it. And perhaps all that is being pointed at is hold the question for an answer that's in experience. In other words, you don't have to understand the answer.
In fact, understanding is that movement away from with.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right, that's I have gotten more than like that I think I could have ever dreamed.
That's well, and then holding the question becomes so interesting as a koan, because all kinds of things in life will answer that question. Yeah. Thank you. Kevin.
There was a conversation at the monastery last week, I think on Thursday, about that around, you know, there was sort of a disidentification tool that was being created.
Uh-huh.
And the process of sort of gathering it was necessary to sort of gather some information and look and see what was going on in conditioned mind in order to sort of make this tool, and that what was seen or what I received from that discussion was that it was sort of the process of looking, the process of gathering the information that was so much fun, and it was the whole, you know, the tool never even needed to get created.
Uh-huh. So the what you were looking at, that so from that process that we were working on Thursday night, what you got is that it's the process of looking that's fun. The process of being open and gathering the information that was fun. And really the outcome, whether or not the tool got created, wasn't really the point.
Yeah, and I stress that's what I sort of received from that interaction, and what I've just been seeing is that there's someone that really gets lost in sort of the content of the process. Like, it's sort of like gets lost in what I'm seeing, you know. It's like I'm looking I see a piece of conditioning here, I see a piece of conditioning there, and sort of approaching that process, it just sort of becomes working with these pieces of content, even though it sort of takes on a language of, you know, that this is the process of. Yeah.
Okay, I think I got you. So let me try to rephrase it, and see if this is where you're going.
Please.
In other words, what you're watching is the process of looking gets conditioned because the attention gets focused on the content of what is being looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way by which ego engages with ego. Mm-hmm. So instead of becoming aware that there is a process that is looking at content, which is ego looking at ego, you can drop that and look at, there's an awareness that's looking at the process of ego looking at content.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? There's the stepping into sort of the process of being engaged in the process.
Yes, yes.
It
is the shift that I think, it's sort of a shift that takes a while to do in practice, that all that's witnessing is awareness. And so we drop into awareness as the witness of the process. And then it's a very, very different relationship to what we're looking at than when ego is looking at ego.
Very. It feels really huge. And it's something I've kind of been like circling for a while and
yes.
sort of stepping into and stepping out of. And maybe that'll continue. But I just have this feeling of taking us a few steps closer.
Uh-huh.
And really sort of getting it in a way that's not really intellectualized. And
it's getting it not in this way.
Right.
Not using the process of ego looking at content.
Right. Well, and I just saw it all play out. I mean, it was definitely involved with the koan process of trying to create this thing.
Or uh-huh.
trying, you know, and wow. After group, okay, by the end of group, it had changed and I realized it was just sort of like ego just kind of fiddling with this thing. And I just went back to my hermitage and just kept fiddling. And then stopped and then sort of exhausted and woke up in the morning. Fiddling started again. Eventually I just got to, you know, there may be a way from conditioned mind to like create some kind of clever riddle that might work as a koan for somebody else.
Uh-huh.
But I don't see how from conditioned mind I'm going to be able to create a koan that will confuse conditioned minds.
Bingo. Yes.
And just working with all these different pieces of content in, you know, just trying to like, us like, okay, this is a place to look and I need to like create this phrase that's going to confuse me.
it's the proverbial dog chasing the tail, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I guess where I got at it with it is that something was offered to me recently, sort of just by life, that just seems very related to what I'm talking about right now. Is where does guidance come from?
Uh-huh.
And and I just watched that happen as I'm trying to create this koan and then dropping it all and coming to this, where does guidance come from? It's like, oh, how did I get to this versus all those other things that I was trying to...
That was such a rich experience.
Yes.
Because it is koan practice, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, that whole process of, okay, we're going to come up with a koan, let's do a guided imagery about it, and then something drops in and it doesn't feel good, and then there's that exhausted process of conditioning, trying to work it and work it and work it, and then you get to this place of going, okay, I give up. And as soon as we get to that process, what drops in is the koan, right? That is, and the koan, not as content that we were looking at earlier, but the process that needs to be looked at, right? So, in other words, you had the experience of the same shift of looking at process from process instead of process from the content from process.
Mm-hmm.
In the movement of how the koan appeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sort of sets me up nicely, having had that experience, to look at where does guidance come from.
That's right.
Yeah.
In the same way, right?
Right.
Because I think everyone would say who's ever worked with a koan, it is that constant conditioned process of trying to figure it out, because that's what we all engage in. And then at some point, it exhausts itself, and in that moment of letting go, the insight's there in a way that this would never have picked it up.
Mm. Mm.
So again, going back to the tool, it's not about the outcome, right? Because the way conditioning would want to set it up is, what's the perfect koan? Mm-hmm. You have no idea whether where guidance comes from is going to be the perfect koan or another process you're going to work with till the koan drops in again. Right?
I'm already seeing that happen, of it coming up and being like, well, maybe we need to look at these other ones or whatever it is. Yeah. And so, yeah, just sort of, yeah, watching the whole thing.
In other words, the koan is a process. It's not mm-hmm. a thing, right? Mm-hmm. A content.
Right.
Wow, that's big and very cool.
It is both. It is both. And I'm I've become excited. I went very quickly in that shift from anxious to excited.
Yeah, that shows the shift too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sequoia.
Oh, well.
Well, you did put up your hands. Did you still want to put up your hands?
And then, okay, so here's the whole process. I mean, what was just talked about in both of those, there was a lot there, you know? And I feel like...
good thing it was recorded.
And so I'm at this place of, that may have answered my... what I was going to talk about, but I'm going to say it because it's a pattern of things get to be prevented from saying what's going on because
So if you didn't talk about it, there's the perpetuation of a karmic orientation that I
should have been able to get everything I ever needed to know from those last two interactions. I mean, truly. And so what I'm seeing with that is that I too wanted to just speak to the koan process. And I see what's going on is this thing about understanding, you know, even what's being talked about this morning, you know, of course, I understand that, you know, just that need to get it tidily put away some way, but, you know, okay.
Okay, this is the box, this is the label,
right.
I grokked it.
Yeah.
And that way I can just put it on the shelf and keep walking on.
Right, and somehow that... it gets some grade someplace up in the.
Well, it is such a conditioned process only because, you know, if we think about, I don't know how to say this in any other way, so I'll say it as a finger pointing to the moon, right? Intelligence is intelligencing. It's not a static intelligence. There's no understanding that is, or knowing, if you want to say it that way. That's more relevant than the moment it's known in.
Yeah. I think I understand that.
From here, you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yes.
It's landing and, you know.
Yeah, because this won't use it. It can't use it because its whole thing is about, okay, well, it's ossified, fossilized, and locked up in a museum somewhere. With a Dewey Decimal System on how to retrieve it.
Fossilized. That's just perfect for me right now. So what came with my koan was, what is self-care? And then, what dropped in is, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself in the third... precept of care for all sentient beings. And of course, you know, I could just see everything in that about how I put care for this being somehow outside of that care for all sentient beings.
So let me make sure I'm with you, that the precept was pointing at a process whereby there's the ability to care for everything except this being.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, and I see how it's like, it's more than that. It's like everything is sort of a tool for a outcome, or, you know?
Uh-huh.
Instead of just what it is and an expression of life and worthy of being loved. Just, I mean, it's like, you know, I've seen myself use tools.
Yes.
And, okay, as soon as I get that thing cut, the tool will just get tossed.
You know, it's like, okay, it did its job. I don't need it anymore, sort of thing. And I just see that process running through.
Yeah.
You know.
Some very famous Zen teacher said, you know, part of our the problem with modern day is that we look at the entire world as equipment.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
That it's all utilitarian.
Yeah.
It's all about functional use,
yeah.
including this person.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that quality of non-attention,
yeah.
because everything has its use, and once it's usefulness is worn out, you just let it go,
yeah.
is very, very different from the process of caring that's being suggested by that precept.
Yeah, I mean, and, well, I just saw a lot in that. I mean, so as a body ages, you know, that really brings up all of that, you know. It's like, oh, gosh, you know.
The tool is wearing out.
The tool is wearing out. What does that mean? You know, what does that mean?
Yes.
You know, when you come from that whole orientation of, I forget what you just said.
Equipment.
The equipment to be used, and when it's not, and when it's, you know, old and it's not, it's not as functional. Does that mean that it's less worthy of being, of that attention?
Yeah.
It's less sentient, it's less...
Or it's less useful.
It's less useful, yeah.
I mean, that's the belief that we're looking at, right?
Yeah.
Just because there is usage doesn't mean that... I mean, if we were Japanese and we're looking at wabi-sabi, the more venerable a tool is, the more reverence we offer it.
So it just started out with, well, I think I have my koans solved, you know. So now I have to go on to the next one. You know?
Oh, so basically that it was a tool, it was useful for this insight, and then needs to be discarded because there's no more use to be derived from it.
I just tossed that one on the ground.
But then you can use it as you're looking at is if you don't use it, if it's not used from that perspective of equipment, but there's care for the koan itself.
Yeah.
You could engage with the koan as the process of caring, right? That you move to that different process you're looking at, even with the koan.
Wow, that's beautiful. None of it is, none of it's irrelevant, none of it's, you know, an accident, and to just care. I mean, even that, it's like, so that's what arose with life. And then I would want to toss it aside.
I would want to toss it aside
and go on for the next thing, you know. The next new shiny thing.
Well, in other words, the same Zen teacher said, we care for something because it exists. It's a very different attitude of mind.
Right, it really is.
And that is that we care for existence because it exists, not because it's useful.
And I mean, absolutely, that's where the heart lives.
Yes.
It's that whole conditioning about the equipment that never gets examined. I don't know why, I think of when I was first at the monastery and I was given a job to repair a shovel to put a new handle on it. Well, in the orientation of everything as equipment, that shovel would have gone in the garbage a long time ago. You know, it's like that thing is, you know, that's not repairable. And you know, it'd be next. And but I did the job because I was given it, and I repaired the shovel. And what an incredible feeling of satisfaction. You know, it just felt incredibly kind to just be with that object and to...
Well, and you know, if you think about how much the shovel wants to give of itself, like if we don't dismiss it as a disposable, non-sentient object, then there's so much life force in the shovel that wants to offer all that it can do.
Yeah.
It doesn't want to be retired.
No. Yeah, it doesn't want to be retired. Anyway,
so to facilitate facilitate its ability to continue to serve is such an act of love.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's to see. It's only day one of your koan, Sequoia.
What was that?
I said it's only day one of your koan.
I know. So there was something to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Jodine.
I arrived yesterday for the retreat, and I noticed something. And I was listening to recordings that I made the last time I was here on retreat during my drive. And so I decided, I want to record every chance I get. Mm-hmm. And so before anything, I was recording in the garden. And it seems like I got a koan, but I didn't until sitting here in group realize what was going on. And the what I had been noticing was that there was kind of a different quality of my experience as I was coming to the monastery, and then as I was like settling in. And I was trying to describe it. And I guess that then the mentor said, would you say you're just a lot more present? And I was like, I'm experiencing presence.
Wow.
Yeah, but there was no, until I started talking about it, I wasn't, labeling it. I was just like, mm-hmm. And so then what arose was, that's so different from my daily life. Like it feels really different right now.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go back and listen to that recording again because I can't remember exactly how it arose, but the suggestion was, the question arose, where does it go?
Aha! Oh! So the whole process of listening to the recording and noticing the qualitative difference of experience, which suggested presence, led to the koan arising of where does presence go in your daily life?
Right, like this, I just felt this like swell of it here in this experience.
Uh-huh.
And then like, where does it go when, the tide goes out?
So just a suggestion for that, sort of related to your koan. Another step related to the koan, which is what choice do I have?
Oh, well, yeah, I didn't even see how maybe they could be related.
Because if you're choosing, if you're not ending suffering, if you're not choosing to end suffering, you're not choosing presence.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be another step in looking at presence. Where does presence go? Or was that a leap that I made that you didn't quite make? You weren't looking.
Well, I was just as I was sharing last night, the group experience was bringing up this other, what choice do I have? And I suppose the answer to that could be, I could just be present.
Yes. Or where does it go? Is a different version of the same question.
If I find that it's gone. What did I choose? What was I choosing, to get me there?
Yeah.
Or something, yeah.
Interesting, isn't it, how all of the facets come to the experiences we have?
And the whole, something about the language, I guess, is, you know, is there just kind of a small set of experiences? You know, is the being just cycling from, you know, presence, awareness, to identification, and back again, and then trying to say something about it later?
What an interesting koan. I mean, what an interesting thing to watch during the week.
Yeah.
Where does it, how did you phrase it again? I want to make sure I say it right. Where does it go?
Yeah, where does the presence, where does presence go?
Where does presence go? Thank you. Jen?
I'm really enjoying just experiencing everyone's looking as it's happening.
Uh-huh.
I'm just kind of, yeah. So I'm going to see if I can articulate what I'm looking at. So very similar to, I mean, it's all kind of the same koan, I suppose. But so I've really been looking at how this thing of there is no subject-object, there's only subjectivity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. That's most...
Very, way, way.
Yeah. And that there's a... I've just been really... It's very, very much a koan practice.
Yes.
Practice. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, I have no idea what any of that means. But what I notice is there's a tremendous impact on the whole energy system, for lack of a better way to describe it, as that koan is held. And I've been doing it for a number of months now. Mm-hmm. And there's all I can say is that there are just these moments of that are just there. Mm-hmm. And then they're not. I think that's, I love that. Where does the presence go?
Yes.
You know? Uh-huh. So I had this flash a couple of days ago that I have no idea if I'll be able to describe it, but where it just was this sense of like, right, no wonder I can't get it. Because in that, you know, voidness, that lack of an I, that all is one thing,
that I
is annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm trying to think of an analogy, because analogies work so well for me, but there's got to be some really good analogy for it, but it hasn't dropped in yet. But it's like expecting something to solve a riddle whose answer kills it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's, yes. So it's very survival depends on not seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So if I'm understanding you, the solving of the riddle, what solves the riddle will be annihilated in solving of the riddle, so it's never going to solve the riddle.
Exactly. So when you said that, it's dancing around the koan somewhere, because what solves the riddle? I mean, that's kind of the koan.
Yes.
What solves the riddle?
Yes.
What can solve the riddle? What does? So that's, so this week, I just want to take advantage of, I'd love to have that, a phrase that simply, because it was, you know, we were talking about that last night, how that is the, what's so fun about koan practice. You know, you talked about the repetition of it, and that we talked about it's a place to put attention. And in my experience, it's a place to put the attention to hold, for the system to be sort of anchored to, if you will. That's not a good word, but to give, yeah, while, which frees up the whole everything to be available.
It's like why you bring the attention back to the count in meditation is
right.
To give attention, a conditioned mind, something to do so the awareness
right.
can operate.
Right,
yeah?
Right. So it is something, you know, what you just said is something around. So anyway, yeah, wanting to have a phrase just to play with, but very aware that all it is a marker.
Yeah.
It's just a marker. It's not a thing that I actually want anything's going to do anything with. But
yeah.
It's just a...
Well, and it sort of brings together all the bits we were talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the width is the conundrum in itself.
Exactly.
So stating it is
exactly.
collapses the koan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And therefore points to the experience that's
yeah.
that's being intuited that the phrasing points at and makes it absurd. The phrasing becomes absurd.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have to have something to dash against. It's almost, to me, it's like the waves breaking against the rock, wearing it away, because the structure of that movement allows for the collapse of the the absurdity, the construct itself. Because, I mean, my favorite expression of that is the eyes can't see themselves.
Me too. Or the teeth can't bite themselves.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you have to get out of the process that is pointing at in order to see anything.
And that's the koan.
And that is the koan.
You know?
Yes.
I mean, and there's just like 6 trillion koans in it, because what even wants to do that? You know? And what... But there is. There is that consciousness seeing itself or something in that. But it's just that you know, 99.99% of the time we're identified with the eye who only pretends that it wants to look at it, or that it's interested, or that it's...
Well, or the what I think you're pointing at is it's the experience of it.
Right?
In other words, conditioning wants to have an interpretation, a description, labeling.
Exactly.
But what we're seeing is it's the experience of it, which can never actually be described, right? That's the conundrum.
Right. Yeah. It can't be described. There's no one to describe it. There's nothing to describe.
Yeah.
You know? And that, but in those, having the experience of it little by little here and there, what feels like grows is, and what word do you put in there, right?
The faith.
Well, the faith, but the desire was the word that I was stumbling on. Because what it feels like is the scales start to get tipped from that I who wants to explain it and have it be about me and have the da-da-da. But to have those moments, those flashing moments of the, if we go back to the union, not the union with, but just is-ness, then there's like a sense of, okay, practice what takes... There.
Yeah.
Taking out the pronouns. You know?
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yeah.
So there's like... the experience of doing the practice leads us to the motivation to keep doing it because it takes us to the place where we want to be.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no explanations required.
And no explanations required. Yeah.
Okay. Cameron.
Yeah, not being part of the retreat, this is just...
You can, you know. You could just come up with a koan
check in with us. That's what I want to do, and that's why I was wondering if there was a particular question or something that was presented that helped people to find the koan, or, I mean, how did you enter into this?
Simply, what do you want to focus on for your practice this week?
Ah, okay. Okay.
And so is there anything that's specific coming up in your practice, an issue or content that suggests a question that you could hold for the rest of the week?
Okay. Well, I'm in a place where I think where everything is in question, so...
Oh, wonderful! Lovely.
Yeah, so just sit with, and something will drop in the form of a question, which will...
Yeah, there's sort of an essence of something you want to explore. It could be like somebody had, what is compassion? Uh-huh. It's interesting because it takes us into a process of inquiry about something we think we know. Or it could be, you know, something like union. Well, what does that mean? Or whatever it is that you're exploring, however you want to phrase that. But to hold it in awareness in every moment, so that life could drop the clarity in, and a clarity that's not resolution completely, but, you know, clarity in the sense of it, of unfolding insight deeper and deeper over the period of time we're looking at it in awareness.
Well, and what I'm resonating so intensely with is the experiential quality of the insight. That it is an experience, and that it can't be explained, and it can't be understood, but it can certainly be experienced.
Yes, it can be known in the sense of intelligence knowing itself, right?
Yes.
As a recognition.
Yes, it's a recognition of something that I might not have thought I knew, but it is a recognition. It's not like a, oh, this is new and wonderful. It's
uh-huh.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Someone used the word, you don't solve a koan, it resolves itself.
Mm-hmm.
That is
mm-hmm.
coming back to something we know. We know mm-hmm. from here, not from here.
Or maybe the resolution comes in the form of knowing that you don't need an answer to anything.
Absolutely. That you don't need an answer.
You just have to be here and everything is fine.
Uh-huh. In fact, we live in the process of the question.
We live in process.
Oh, that's a good, that we could just stop right there. We live in process.
Yeah, because most of what, I mean, all the, what ego wants to do is live in the content.
Yes.
And in the results.
And
in the getting somewhere mm-hmm. and
the
being
outcomes.
Someone and mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the intelligence of life, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with
intelligencing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this has been a great group.
Good.
And we're not even done, are we?
No. No. Here are some more people. Lakota.
I'm loving this conversation. It's so great. It's it's really kind of kicking me energetically out of here and
uh-huh.
down to here.
Uh-huh.
Kind of in out of the head and into the heart. And away from that process of trying to figure it out and get it right, be the right Zen student who will somehow make the right thing happen, into an experience of simply being
uh-huh.
and enjoying.
Uh-huh.
And the koan I was looking at was what is connection with authenticity? But I think I'm going to just go to what is authenticity.
Yeah, or what is connection? Yeah, what is authenticity?
Yeah. And what's arising kind of as a result of this conversation that's bypassing all of the intellectualizing and whatnot and going straight to the joy is, it is that. It's just that joyful, dancing participation with whatever is arising.
Uh-huh.
There's a happiest poem in the What Universe Are You Creating book that just, it just moves me so deeply. It's, that kind of speaks to this. It's, every child knows God, not the God of names, not the God of don'ts, not the God who never does anything weird.
Uh-huh.
But the God who only knows four words and repeats them over and over, saying, come dance with me. Come dance. And it's like, that's authenticity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. With all the flavors of the experience of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Letting
go of the don'ts and the naming and the trying to figure out and just dancing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I might reflect what you started out with, that when we bypass the whole intellectualization and figuring out process, what's left is the joy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and in my experience, it's not like there's an I who can figure out how to bypass that.
That's right. That is the koan practice,
right?
That's what we recognize from doing it, that there is a process of dashing against the
exactly.
rocks and dashing against the rocks, and then you let go, and then that's what we've got.
Beautiful.
But you can't just bypass the process, you can tread the path often enough that the time it takes between, oh, I'm doing koan practice to, oh, that insight showed up might get less.
Right.
But that's about it.
And it's helpful as I'm in the process of dashing, knowing that the dashing isn't what's going to do it, although it is seems to be a requirement.
Yes.
I've noticed it in the process of working with addictions and letting them go, which I find awareness practice is, you know, it's working with the ultimate addiction and letting it go. So the actual content addictions are very helpful practice for
koan practice.
Letting go of the big one.
Yeah.
But
it's the same process, right?
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
a the awareness builds that what we are doing is a process of letting go. And there are certain things we do as part of the process of letting go.
Precisely, yeah. And what I see with that is that willingness is required. It's like the dashing.
Yes.
But that's not actually what does it. In the end, it's grace. Uh-huh. But it's like, there has to be. It's willpower, grace seems to be how it works.
Yeah.
So
when you say that, Rukhada, what drops in is, there's willingness as the key to thy will be done.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Because that's what you get. Grace is that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. Very joyous.
Yeah.
Thank you. Krista.
This makes me think of a quote that enlightenment or awakening is an accident. Mm-hmm. And the more we practice, the more accident prone we become.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. So I'm going to say that again. Hopefully I'll get it. Enlightenment is an accident, and the more we practice, the more accident-prone we become.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that's what everyone is talking about.
The benefits of being accident-prone.
Yeah.
With practice.
If you don't practice, you won't be very accident-prone.
Yeah.
For that type of accident.
For that type of accident. Very true.
Right.
Thank you.
Another time.
Yeah. Thank you. Did I see your hands now?
Yes. Last night, what came up for me around koan was self-care, and I didn't exactly have the question. I had, what is self-care? I had, what does self-care look like in my life? I'm working. It seems right. When I was listening just now, and you were rephrasing for Cameron, how did we get led to our koans last night? And the question was, what's coming up in your practice? You know, I heard my voice, which is practice. Your practice is like, down the tubes. You don't have anything going on in your practice, right?
Oh, so, you heard a voice say there's something
going on in your practice. Yeah, I heard that voice saying that, right?
Oh, and wow, you didn't show up at a Zen monastery.
Yeah. So then that something around the connection between self-care and practice and how I think about practice. And I'm not exactly sure what the question is, but there's felt like there was something bubbling up on there around whether, is it that I'm thinking about my practice as self-care, and because I'm struggling with self-care, I feel like my practice is struggling? And is that sort of linking of synonymousness, or is that misplaced? Because practice is practice, self-care is not generally the same thing, I don't think.
Okay, so yeah. What is going on is an inquiry as to the difference between self-care and practice, and whether or not that they're the same thing. So self-care for the voice has nothing to do with practice.
Well, not exactly. So when I was listening, that what dropped in was that I'm thinking about them as the same thing, and I hadn't realized that I was thinking about the same thing, and then the conversation was, are they the same? You know what I mean? Like, you've been carrying this assumption sort of non-verbally in there somewhere that those are the same.
And you should examine whether they are or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what benefits come out of thinking that they're the same thing, and what drawback, but then it all felt like a big conversation.
Yeah, might as well drop it, huh? Yeah, yeah, because the question is, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
Meaning we could practice with anything.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it seems to me that two things arise from watching that process. One is, it's willing to talk about anything to have your attention on it instead of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, to engage in a conversation about the nuances of how practice and self-care are the same or different, or what that means about you or how you're doing it or whatever else, just takes away from practice and self-care, whatever those are, whether you're right or wrong, them, right?
But there's two, right? Because you said and. No, just kidding.
No, and that's the interesting part. The second part that rose for me is the process of that is what we're looking at, right? Because the process that is going on seems to want to divide the world into practice and self-care. Or what's the difference between them? Or what's the similarity? Or how do we compare? Or it's a process of separation. And to acknowledge that we don't want to be in the process of division, separation, analysis, we're in the process of insight, requires us to drop the conversation. Thank you. Judy.
I'm in a foggy place around my koan. My koan's around resting in every step.
Uh-huh.
One of the things I'm seeing is that I don't want, oftentimes, like almost always, I don't want to be where I am. So it's hard to rest when I don't want to be there.
Whoa. Okay. Okay. I'm going to have to catch. I'm getting to that foggy place myself. So the koan is to rest in every step.
Right.
And what you're noticing is that you don't want to be in the place that you are, therefore you can't rest there.
Right.
Uh-huh. Wow.
I think that's part of the urgency. I want to get someplace else.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow, what a great insight, though.
And so?
I mean, so if I reflect what you just said, if that it's almost impossible to rest if you don't want to be there.
Right. Right.
So, sort of answers the, not answers, but it's the insight to what you were looking at.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and I can see the urge to want to fix it.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So, the obvious solution is to want to be where I am.
Uh-huh.
That happened when I don't want to be there.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, it's sort of the same process. If you want to be there or you don't want to be there, you're still in the same process.
Right, right, right.
Well, which is good to see.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So is that objectifying where I am then, rather than just being, it's making it something to either like or not like?
Possibly, but only you'll be able to tell that.
Okay.
So in other words, the only encouragement I would offer is just to stay with what you're seeing. Really, really stay with it, because it's coming through. And where it's perhaps going is up to conditioning. But life's offering you all the clues.
Okay.
In fact, if you record what you just said and listen to it, something might drop in. Thank you. Anyone else before we go?
The koan that dropped in for me, well, it's, I guess, my second koan that dropped in last night, it grew, was that I'm confused. Yeah. Which feels like before it would have been a terrifying place, but now it's like, okay, that's probably a good thing, because now I'm getting somewhere. Uh-huh. So it feels like I'm getting nowhere, and there's definitely a voice inside my head. So why did we choose to do this? Like, why did I do the one? Why did I just do there's nothing wrong with you again? Instead of your practice retreat.
So the voice is going, I'm confused because I can't find my koan. And that's not a terrifying place anymore, even if the voice is asking you why you came on this retreat.
No, it's more like, I don't know, it's just like, I feel very out of my comfort zone, which I'm ironically very comfortable with now, after.
Yes,
which is very interesting, because
I'm definitely out of my comfort zone, yet I'm kind of liking it in a strange way. Because I know from a deeper place now that this is where I'm going to see change, even though nothing is really making sense. It's, you know, like even in doing physical practice, like, okay, the days where you really feel like you're not getting anywhere and you're really tired, you do it and it's like, oh, well, there it is. I don't know I could do that. Mm-hmm. And I've come to trust that place, even though the experience of it is just not anywhere where I think it should be.
Uh-huh. So if I'm understanding you correctly, there's a huge embracing of the koan of I am confused.
Yes.
Because what is being pointed at for you is, even though there's a discrepancy between what it says it should be and what it is, what's not resulting in is a huge level of suffering over it.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Right? Definitely, in other words, it's sort of got the circuit, because it's supposed to produce this input and it's supposed to produce this experience and it's not, and there's that place of going, well, what's going on?
Right, and it's almost cueing me when that voice kicks in, like, oh, why am I here? Why am I doing this? It's like, okay. Then I almost know that I'm almost certainly in the place that I want to be, actually. Yeah.
Well, actually, it answers the koan. I am confused. It is confused, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a attention is going on the experience, not on the belief. And the comparative process between the experience and the belief is being confounded.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of rest or become comfortable in that sense you're talking about of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. When we're with life, it's one experience. When we're with conditioning, it's another experience. When we're awareness witnessing the dissolution of an identity, that's another experience that we could get comfortable with too.
Yeah, I've learned to make peace with that confusion.
Yes. Yes, or recognize that what is confused is not what's experiencing, which is a really good way of knowing that that's not all there is. Wow. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.